Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay. I still have these unanswered questions going back to the 9th of December. I have to try to answer them. Let me open up the file. It's a question from Nityananda Prabhu about something in Anuchet 3.5. Okay. You were asking, Nityananda Prabhu was asking, we had these examples of these strange sentences like pachati bhavati, which means really paka bhavati. There is cooking. And he's asking, how is that explained, or how is that analogous to the word Bhagavan having a deleted va in the suffix van, possessing? It's bhagava and van, and the V in the suffix, van, was deleted because that's allowed in the Vedic language. And we get Bhagavan, not Bhagavavan. You're asking, what does that have to do? What does Pachati Bhavati have to do with that? How does Pachati Bhavati give a similar situation? And the answer is, it doesn't. It's not to explain how Bhagavan lost its syllable, but to explain how sambarta in the next verse, sambarta means, you know, sambarteti, what is it? The syllable ba means sambarta and barta. Well, and then we say sambarta literally means the person, maintainer. But our context demands that it should mean the act of, the state of being a maintainer. The quality of being a maintainer, because these are the bhagas, the person who has these qualities. So it should refer to a quality, not a person. And so it's explained that the word sambarta can be presumed that the author meant by it sambartritva, the quality of being a maintainer. And that is similar to taking the word pachati, which is supposed to be a verb, and using it as a noun. You know, shifting the part of speech to make it fit the context. Of course, there's a grammatical explanation for pachati. There's this suffix shtip that's assumed that turns it into a noun. Well, there's a suffix twa here, but it's invisible or was deleted. Okay, that's what's similar. All right, I hope that answers that question. Let's see what other questions are there. Okay, that one I'll file. Well, this is also from Nityananda Prabhu on the same day. It says, these are questions on material read by us long before. Okay, you say you can ask me individually, but anyway, let's do it. But I'm not sure if I can figure out where these are from. Yes?
So far back, maybe I can
just... Okay, we'll put this aside. I'll close it, and we'll put that one aside. Let's see what else we have as far as questions. A question on Tattva 37.9. That's the same thing. Okay. I'll just file that copy. From Vishnukanta, Anuchet 3.3. We did that already. I just didn't file it. Okay, I think the rest of the questions are all taken care of, but I didn't file them away. Oh, but you have something on 56 and 57. Anyway, I guess that's it. That's it for questions for now. Now we launch into 6.2. Let me just remind you what 6.1 was about. Okay, it's just announced at the beginning of the sixth anuccheda that the rest of this sandarbha and the whole third sandarbha is dedicated to explaining the verse Vananti Tat Tattva Vidas, especially the second half of it, explaining the concepts of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagawan. Two whole sandarbhas are for that. Now, what we're going to do first is identify the particular manifestation of Brahman and distinguishing it in terms of the difference of the qualification of the person who realizes Brahman, how his qualification is different from the qualification of one who realizes Paramatma and the qualification of one who realizes Bhagawan. And then there's a verse cited from Lord Brahma's prayers in chapter 14 of the 10th canto that someone can realize you as Brahman if he has these qualifications. I'll read the translation of it. Nonetheless, O unlimited one, one whose inner heart is spotless can come to understand your greatness as the supreme, devoid of material qualities. One can do this by the kind of meditation on his own self which transcends the ordinary activity of body and mind, which does not focus on any material object, and which involves recognition that the Supreme and oneself are non-different. Only in this way can one realize Brahman. Okay, since Jiva Goswami will now explain particular phrases in this verse, I'll read the Sanskrit also, so just to remind you. Tatapi bhumanda mahima gunasyate vibodam arhatyam amalantar atmabihi. And what's being commented on is the second half. So here's the second half. Avikriyat swanubhavad arupato hyananya bodhyatmataya nachanyata. Okay, now 6.2. Kasman nimittat tatraha swanubhavat shuddha tvam padartasya bodhat. Okay, by what means do people accomplish this? How do they realize Brahman? This is answered by self-realization, meaning becoming aware of the entity called you, the jiva, in its pure state. Why is the jiva called you? Tatvamasi, it's really referring, alluding to that statement, you are that. The tvam padartha. Okay. So that's what swanubhavat in the verse. People realize Brahman by swanubhava. That would be hetuvachaka tritiya. By means of swanubhava. And that's realizing one's own self, the jiva. You realize Brahman by realizing yourself, the jiva, the pure jiva. Okay, but now there's an objection to that suggestion. Nanu, anubhava kalu antakarana vritti, sacha stula sukshma deha vikara mayi, evasati katam nirvikaram tvam padartam vishayam kurvita. Sorry. Okay, but perception is a function of the mind, and the functions of the mind derive from the changing states of the gross and subtle bodies. As such, how can perception take as its object the unchanging entity, you, the jiva? The word was anubhava, swa anubhava. Anubhava is perception. But perception is a mental function. The mind just deals with gross and subtle objects. How is the perception of the mind going to come in contact with or reveal the spiritual jiva. That's the objection. And there is an answer. Avikriyat. Chakta tad tad vikarat. Okay, that's a short answer. How can perception take its object? As its object, the unchanging entity you? By perception, which avoids the transformations of gross and subtle bodies. There's a you can have a perception of something that isn't material. By such perception, you can realize yourself and then realize the Supreme Soul. Okay, another objection. Nanu vishayakara evanubhavo vishayam upadadita shudatvam padartas tu nakasyapi vishayak syad. Patyak rupatvat. But for perception to have access to some object, it must assume the form of that object. Really? Vishayakara evanubhavo. Yeah, okay. Must assume the form of that object. Okay. If I have a perception of a blue cow, then that my perception must be in a cow form and have blue color. My perception must have. The perception has to be in the form of its object, of what it's perceiving. So the objection is, but for perception to have access to some object, in general, it must assume the form of that object. The pure entity you, however, never becomes the object of any perception, because it only manifests inwardly to itself. That's interesting. The jiva is pratyagrupa. That means not that it has no rupa, no visible form, but it's only visible to itself. Which makes sense. Every one of us is perceiving himself. You know, I have a pain in my toe. That means you're perceiving not only the pain in your toe and its pain, you're perceiving yourself. Because you start the sentence off with the pronoun I. You're perceiving that not only is there a pain somewhere in the universe, but it's my pain. You're perceiving yourself in that proposition. Everybody's perceiving himself, but we can't perceive one another unless we're yogis. I can't see your soul. So that is what it means to say the jiva is pratyagatma. He's visible, but only to himself. Not visible as anybody's external perception. Only inwardly can the soul be seen. Okay, so that's why the pure entity you, however, never becomes the object of any perception, because it only manifests inwardly to itself. Because anubhava, the Purvapaksha said before, is a function of the mind. So the soul can see the soul, but now he's arguing the mind can't see the soul. This is answered, okay, in Sanskrit. Tatraha arupato rupyate bhavyate iti rupa vishaya tad akarata rahitat deha dvayavesha vishayakarata rahitye sati swayameva shuddha tvam padartat prakashate iti bhavaha. This is answered. That the perception is formless. The argument was based on, you know, the perception has to have the form of the object, and the you, the jiva, doesn't have a visible form. He's only visible to himself. He's not visible to any or anything or anybody else. Well, The answer is arupa to, because the perception, this is a perception that doesn't take a form. This is a formless perception. That means it is not configured in the shape of any form or concrete object. Where form here means that which takes shape is conceived of concretely. Well, okay. Anyway, that just means it doesn't have a material form. And then did I skip a sentence in the translation? Yeah, there's a sentence missing in the translation. I'm sorry, could you hold on a second? And I'll have to try to ad hoc give you a translation of the missing sentence. The Sanskrit is saying that, sorry, now I lost my place completely. Okay. This perception, the perception of the self, of the pure self, is arupa, because it's arupa. That means, it doesn't take the form of a conceived shape. While avoiding taking the shape of an object, avesha. How do I translate? I'm sorry, this is a difficult sentence and I didn't translate it. Okay, anyway. The pure Shuddha Tvampadartha, the jiva, manifests by itself in the absence of assuming any form in the shape of conformance to the gross and subtle bodies. When you're perceiving the pure self, it's not a reflection, it's not in terms of gross and subtle body. All the perception of gross and subtle body has to be put aside, and you have to let the Shuddha Jiva, the pure Jiva, reveal itself. That kind of perception. So in that sense, it doesn't take the form of anything to do with the gross or subtle body. Okay, that sentence was never translated. I'll have to add it. Continuing, Nanu, another objection. Nanu, sukshma chid rupa tvam padart anubhave, katam purna chid akara rupa madhya brahma surupam spuratu. Okay, now it's asked, but how from perception of the entity you, a minute sample of living consciousness, does my essential identity of Brahman, the total embodiment of all living consciousness, become perceived? Okay, this is interesting. Who's the Purvapaksha? Who's raising all these objections? It looks like it's Krishna who's the objector here. He's the Purvapakshi. That wasn't revealed up to this point, that it's actually Krishna asking the questions. Anyway, what he's asking now is, okay, you can have perception of the pure jiva, you, but how does that turn into perception of the Supreme Soul, of Brahman? And the answer is, tatraha, in response to that, it is said, ananya bodhyatmataya. Chidakara ta samyena shuddhatvam padart aikya bodhya swarupataya. Ananya bodhyatmataya was the phrase in the verse. Translation, this is possible. That is, you can realize the Supreme Soul by realizing the finite soul. This is possible because the perception involves recognition of non-difference, sameness as living spirit. In other words, the nature of the perception is that it recognizes the oneness of the pure entity you with the Supreme. Okay? When you're using your realization of yourself to discover the nature of the Supreme, you're focusing on the non-difference, on the qualitative sameness of you and it. If you weren't, then it wouldn't get anywhere. It wouldn't help you. But when you're looking at what's the same, not everything's the same, but when you look at what's the same, then looking at yourself will help you understand the Supreme Soul. Okay, there's a commentary, short one here. The doubts raised here, in continuation from the previous paragraph, are spoken by the Supreme Lord. Continuation, because we're dealing here with the second half of the verse in this anuccheda, in this paragraph. These objections, the doubts, are spoken by the Supreme Lord, to whom Chaturmukha Brahma offered, I left out the verb, offered the prayer beginning Tatapi Bhuman, the verse we're discussing. When the Lord refers to the entity you, he means not the particular Brahma, person Brahma. He doesn't mean you, Brahma. But he means the finite living entities in general. This, Dharma, are you falling asleep? Or? This terminology, I'm sorry too. Okay, you can fall asleep. If I fall asleep, we're in trouble. This terminology is borrowed from Shruti, the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.21, Tattvamasi Shvetaketu. My dear boy Shvetaketu, you are the same as it. The entity you in this statement is the Jivatma, and it is the Paramatma. Advaitavadis take this as a proposition that there is literally no difference between the jivas and God. But Vaishnavas understand it differently, that the you belongs to it as his creature and servant. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah, it's not that messy. I think this can be understood. Okay. Okay, we're done with that verse, I think. And we move on. What would you like me to explain? Those are my own words. Okay. Well, he's explaining the last phrase in the verse. Ananya bodhya atmataya na chanyata. Ananya bodhya atmataya. In terms of being souls, you got two different souls: big soul and little soul, but they're both atmas. So in terms of being atmas that are being thought of as ananya, non-different. Ananya bodhya atmataya. When you carry out your self-realization, thinking of how you are qualitatively equal to God, like God is eternal, I'm eternal, God's conscious, I'm conscious, God is blissful, I'm sometimes blissful. So that's the sameness, ananya bodhya, thinking what's the same. You know, if I'm thinking about myself, but I'm thinking about how I'm different from God. God's real big and I'm very small. God doesn't make any mistakes. I make lots of mistakes. Then that's not going to help you discover God. That's going to help you discover what's not God. You want to discover what is God, you got to look at what's the same. I'm conscious, he's conscious. Then you start understanding God. Okay? So that's all that's saying. You know, the you manage to turn self-realization into God-realization when you're focusing on what's the same between the jiva and God. Anyway, that's just wrapping up his explanation of Brahma's prayer. Brahma's showing how someone... Brahma is talking about what are the qualifications for realizing Brahman. And he's saying, yes, even though your impersonal greatness is formless, it can be realized if someone does this, this, and this. And he describes the ways, what you can do to realize Brahman. Amalantaratma bi, you should have a pure heart. You should put aside your thinking about all the material transformations. You should meditate on yourself, and that meditation should not be in the form of material of manifestations of the gross and subtle bodies, but something else. And you should direct your attention to how you, as pure spirit, share the same spiritual qualities as the Supreme Soul has. Then you can realize Brahman. Okay? Yeah. Paramatma. Which one? How does it begin? You mean the one that was missing? Well, okay. Yeah, let me find it. It's at 6.2. I'm looking at 6.1. Well, the pure living entity reveals itself by itself when one avoids letting his awareness take the form of material objects modeled after the gross and subtle bodies. Something like that. Okay. Now we try 6.3. Okay. I think we're done explaining that verse, but we're going to continue on the topic. Yadyapi tadrig atmanubhavanantaram tadananya bodhyakritau sadaka shaktir nasti tatapi purvam tadartam eva kritaya sarvatrap upajivyaya sadhana bhaktya raditasya shri bhagavatak prabhavad eva tadapi tatro dayate iti bhavaha. Well, it is still discussing the idea of the verse. And we're done with the word-by-word analysis. One endeavoring on this path does not have the power of his own to directly perceive his own non-difference from the Supreme, even after he has thus come to the stage of perceiving his own spiritual self. Okay. By his own endeavor, a living entity can come to the point of self-realization. But the living entity doesn't have in himself the power to go further than that and realize the Supreme Soul. Continuing, nonetheless, as the verse under discussion implies, this person must have previously engaged in the regulated practice of devotional service for the purpose of gaining his self-realization. Since all spiritual practices depend on devotional service for their success. Okay, this is the point that... Okay, suppose someone has reached self-realization. The problem is that even if a person may have the power to realize himself, the jiva doesn't have the power in himself to realize the Supreme Soul. But if he's actually become successful in realizing himself, which is a a real spiritual accomplishment. He must have previously engaged in some practice of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Because without at least a tinge of bhakti, no real spiritual practice can be successful, including realizing yourself as pure spirit. There must have been, a person who's successful in that must have done some practice of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Okay, now following from that idea, then, okay, that means that the person who is self-realized must have done some devotional service. And that doing devotional service means establishing some connection with the Supreme Person. Now, that means that person has actually, to some extent, awakened his relationship with the Supreme Person. So then, by the power of the personality of Godhead, who was worshipped by that devotional service, this perception of non-difference arises in the seeker. In other words, a person who has realized his own self as pure spirit, he could only have done that if he did some devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Having done some devotional service to the Supreme Lord reciprocates with him and reveals himself as an act of reciprocation. It's not by the power of the jiva, but by the power of the Supreme Lord whom one has begun to establish contact with, that one graduates from self-realization to God-realization. Tad uktam vanandi it yadi padyantaram anantaram eva. This is described, Hare Krishna, this is described in the verse immediately following. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth. Vedanti yat tattva vidas. That's the main verse under discussion for the next two sandarbhas. But the verse right after that says something that actually explains what we're talking about right now. That verse is tatradhadana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pasyanti atmani chatmanam bhaktya shruta grihitaya. That is also spoken by Suta Goswami in the third chapter of the first canto. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. So, the serious student can realize the Supreme Soul by practicing devotional service, following the injunction, the orders of the scripture. That's saying the same thing that we just said. Not on his own power, but by the grace of the Lord whom one has begun rendering service to, one can graduate from self-realization to God-realization. And this is the style of service which is sadhana bhakti, vaidhi bhakti, following the rules and regulations as given by guru and shastra. This verse talks about Vedanta, but the general principle is sadhana bhakti or vaidhi bhakti must be followed according to the orders of guru and shastra. Okay, and then another statement from the Bhagavatam, 8th canto, last chapter. Madhyam mahimanam cha. Oh, satyavratam prati sri shri matsya devopadeshe cha. Madhyam mahimanam cha param brahmeti shabditam vetsas yanugrahitam me samprashnayar vivritam ridi iti. Shri Brahma, Shri Bhagavantam. What does that last sentence mean? What did he tell? What were you going to say?
The verse under discussion in the Sunday Chain.
Was spoken by Sri Brahma to Sri Bhagavan. Brahma's prayer to Krishna. Yes. The only thing is that the original numbering system is a little lost, and the current numbering system is based on some printed edition. So there may be mistakes in saying where the Anuchedas begin. So the you may find this Vishaya Shloka showing up in what seems to be the wrong place. It's probably because we're not following the original exact numbering system. We're not breaking up the Anuchedas right. But it's hard. We don't have the original copy, the original manuscript, so we can't fix it up. Every edition is slightly different in the way they break up the Anuchedas. Anyway, this verse spoken by Lord Sri Matsya also says in his instructions to Satyavrata, that's the last chapter of the eighth canto, you will be thoroughly advised and favored by me. And because of your inquiries, everything about my glories, which are known as the Supreme Brahman, will be manifested within your heart. Thus you will know everything about me. The verse under discussion was spoken by Lord Brahma to the personality of Godhead. Okay, so Matsya is saying the same thing. And he's saying that, you know, he's blessing Satyavrata that you're going to realize Brahman. Of course, this is Bhagavan talking to him. He's already realized Bhagavan. But he's making the point that because of the service you've done for me, I will give you my blessings and empower you to understand Bhagavan. That's how you get to understand Bhagavan, by doing some devotional service. Of course, if you're a fully realized devotee and you actually have entered the Lord's pastimes, then what do you need Brahman realization for? You don't need it. But anyway, the blessing is there. Satyavrata found some place for Matsya to swim, and then he had to find a bigger place and a bigger place. And finally, Matsya told him to build a boat, and Satyavrata Muni built Noah's Ark, and then the flood came. So that was the service, the devotional service performed by Satyavrata. And in reciprocation to that, Matsya is blessing him. You will realize my impersonal feature. Okay, commentary. By the special potency of the Lord known as Anugraha, it's an energy, he's Anugraha energy, mercy, Anugraha, mercy, the endeavors of aspiring devotees bear their desired fruit, as do even the efforts of persons whose intention is primarily something other than love of God, but who still have turned to the process of devotional service. They get their material fruits, but they get it on the strength of devotional service and by the blessings of the Lord. They get the material thing they want. Even impersonal sages who are not hateful of the Supreme Lord, that means the few impersonalists who are not complete Mayavadis, but simply naive about the separate identities of themselves and God, are also favored by the all-merciful Lord. He inspires them from within their hearts and externally by the instructions of the Upanishads to realize that he and his finite creatures share the same spiritual nature, Satchit Ananda, eternal life in full awareness and bliss. This, in effect, is realization of Brahman. That is Anuchet 6. That pretty much is the Brahma Sandarbha. There's a little more about Brahman, but that's basically everything that the Bhagavatam has to say about Brahman. Actually, there's more here there is more coming up. This Anuchet 7 and maybe even after that. But we're still inside the Brahma Sandarbha. Okay, Anuchet 7. Tadrishabir Bhavam Aha Sardena. Hold on a second. This is Okay. It's a verse and a half, but in our edition, it's written as a six-line verse. So we have it in the BBT edition as one verse, but it's six lines. The Supreme's appearance in this form of Brahman is described in 1.5 verses. Okay, we discussed the qualification of a particular meditator to realize Brahman. Now we're describing the particular way in which Brahman manifests. What distinguishes it from the manifestation, from the appearance, the way that Paramatma appears and the way that Bhagawan appears? What's special about the way Brahman appears? That is discussed, tadrishavibhavam, the manifestation in the form of Brahman, is described in 1.5 verses. Shashwat prashantam abhayam pratibodha matram shudham samam sadasatak param atma tatvam shabdo nayatra pudukara kavan kriyarto maya parait jabumuke chavilajamana tadvai param bhagavatak paramasya pumso brahmeti yadvidura jasva sukam vishokam. This is spoken by Lord Brahma to Narada at the end of Brahma's instructions, near the end of the 7th chapter of the 2nd canto. What is discussed in the 7th chapter of the 2nd canto? Yeah, the Leela avatars of the Supreme Lord. Brief descriptions, and then 10 whole verses describing Krishna Leela. And then at the end, there's some statement here about impersonal Brahman. Translation. What is realized as the absolute Brahman is, this is describing what's the way in which Brahman appears. What does he appear like? You could say Brahman's nothing. There's no appearance. But there is something. There is some realization. And here is a description of what Brahman realization looks like. What is realized as the absolute Brahman is full of unlimited bliss without grief. That's something tangible. That is certainly the ultimate phase of the supreme enjoyer, the personality of Godhead. He is eternally void of all disturbances and fearless. He is complete consciousness as opposed to matter, uncontaminated and without distinctions. He is transcendental to all material causes and effects, the soul of all souls. Absent from him is the sacrificial language with its many semantic functions for the sake of fruitive ritual activities. Ashamed to be in the presence of them, of those whose faces are turned toward his, the illusory energy Maya flees from them. Now, I'll make a few editing notes here. The BBT edition says Paramatma Tattvam, the Tattva of the Paramatma. Jiva Goswami, in his explanation, breaks it up differently, although the Devanagari would look the same, but his explanation is different. He takes it as Param and then Atma Tattva, the supreme truth, which is the soul. He doesn't take it to be Param Atma. He takes it to be Atma Tattva and then the separate adjective Param. Then I made a few changes here in Prabhupada. This is basically Prabhupada's translation, but I made a few changes. Let me show you what I do here, just to give you an idea of what's going on, what we had to do to put this together. Because I use Prabhupada's translations when it doesn't make a difference, but when it doesn't exactly fit Jiva Goswami's explanation, where Prabhupada's presenting it in a different way, and there's always possibility for multiple ways of translating and explaining Bhagavatam verses. So when Prabhupada's translation doesn't exactly fit Jiva Goswami's comments, I have to change the translation to make it fit the comments. So to do that, in this case, I've added one missing phrase, and that's simply the supreme soul of souls. Where is that? I guess param atma tattvam. Well, I had to add that phrase because Originally, we had Paramatma Tattvam, but this is Paramatma Tattvam. So I translated that as the Supreme Soul of Souls, which is not there in Prabhupada's translation. And then the last sentence I had to change, because Jiva Goswami, Prabhupada talks about Maya fleeing from the Lord, but the way Jiva Goswami will explain it in the later part of this anuchet is that Maya is running away from the pure devotees, from those who turn their face toward the Lord. In other words, she's embarrassed to show herself to pure devotees. So I changed the translation of the last sentence to fit Jiva Goswami's explanation that's coming up. Sometimes I have to redo the translation altogether. Sometimes I just make modifications like this, and sometimes I can leave it alone. And I'm sure somebody's going to be angry with me for doing that, but I had to do it. Okay, commentary. Commentary on this much. The particular aspect of the Supreme being discussed here is the impersonal Brahman, the appearance of which was described in the previous anuchet. The Supreme Lord in his Matsya avatar referred to this Brahman as Madhyam Mahimanam, my glories, the most generic form of the Supreme, not revealing his personal qualities, but still non-different from the complete personality of the Lord. Okay. It's not, Brahman is not anything different from Bhagavan, but it's an incomplete realization of Bhagavan. We can try the next paragraph. Ayam Artaha. Okay. This is, we had the six-line verse from 2.7, Bhagavatam. Now some explanation of it. Ayam Artaha. Sarvato brihattamatvad brahmeti yad vidus. Brahmeti yad vidus is in the words in the verse. Tatkalu paramasya pumso bhagavatat padam. Those words are in the verse. Eva. Nirvikalpataya sakshat krite pratimikatvat. This means that which is called Brahman because it is greater than everything else. Okay, it's called Brahma because it's Brihattama, the biggest. That is actually the location of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's the Padam of the Parama Purusha, Bhagavan. So I'm translating Padam as location here. In other words, you have Brahman. Well, in that Brahman, you can find Bhagavan. He's there. Since the preliminary form of realizing the Supreme is as devoid of distinctions. Okay, first of all, you can realize Brahman. And then within that Brahman realization, you can try to discover Bhagavan. So in that sense, Bhagavan's inside Brahman. He's hiding in there. And since Brahman appears as the undifferentiated... No, I have to read the Sanskrit. Brahmanas cha... Bhagavata eva nirvikalpaka sata rupa twad vichitra rupadi vikalpa vishesha vishishtasya bhagavatas tu sakrites tadanantara jatvat tadiya surupa bhutam tad brahma. Those two words are in the verse. Tat sakshat karaspadam bhavati ityartaha. And since Brahman appears as the undifferentiated pure existence of the personality of Godhead, realization of that of the Supreme Person as characterized by his various personal distinctions of bodily form and so on, finds its origin within that realization of Brahman. Okay, Brahman is a special feature of the personality of Godhead. It's the, if you ignore all the qualities, what you're left with is Brahman. You know, pick out all the strawberries and the ice cream and remove all the flavor. You've got vanilla ice cream. So, therefore, You could start your realization of Bhagavan by first realizing Brahman. Brahman can be the first step in realizing, Brahman realization can be the first step in realizing Bhagavan. Because Brahman is Bhagavan just partial realization of it. So start with a partial realization, and that can lead you to the full realization. Continuing. Okay. Thus, Brahman, being of the same essential nature as Bhagavan, is the source of realization of Bhagavan. Nirvikalpaka brahmanas tasya sarupa lakshanam aha, pratibodhamatram iti, ajasra sukham iti, cha. These two phrases are in the verse, pratibodhamatram and ajasra sukham. These are descriptions, adjectives of Brahman. Not supposed to have any qualities, but these are the qualities of Brahman. The essential defining features of this undifferentiated Brahman are stated. It is pure consciousness and perpetual happiness, pratibodhamatram, consciousness and nothing else. And it's constant, eternal happiness, perpetual happiness. Those are adjectives describing impersonal Brahman. Jadasya dukasya cha pratiyogitaya pratiyate yadvastu yatcha nityam tadeka rupam tadrupam ityartaha. In other words, it, Brahman, is by nature such an entity which stands in contrast to dead matter and material distress and is eternally what is without change. So what's Brahman? What can you say about Brahman? Brahman's not supposed to have any qualities. But you can say this about it. Brahman is different than dead material energy. Different. It's different than dead matter. It's alive. And material life is miserable, but Brahman is not miserable. It's blissful. And Brahman is always the same, eternally the same without any change. That you can say about Brahman. Even the impersonalists have to admit you can say that. Yeah, without any change. No change. If something changes, it's not eternally the same. Or it's the same thing, but it's changing. But it's not only the same thing, it never changes. No changes. These are qualities of Brahman. Yad atma tattvam sarvesham atmanam atmanam mulam atma hi svakasha rupataya nirupadi parama prem asparataya cha tad tad rupena pratiyate ityartaha. It, Brahman, is the reality known as the self, atma, the foundation of all selves. Sarvesham Atmanam. Atma Tattva means being glossed as Sarvesham Atmanam Mulam, the root of all Atmas. That's Atma Tattva in this context. You can call the Jiva Atma Tattva, but here we're calling the Paramatma Atma Tattva. That means he's the root of all souls. Or what did I say here? The foundation of all selves. Inasmuch as the Supreme Self is self-manifest and the object of transcendental unconditional love, so it is implied, Brahma also appears with these two attributes. Two attributes are pure consciousness and perpetual happiness. It's self-manifest, so it's pure consciousness. And it's the object of love. Therefore, it's eternally happy. That's the description of Brahman, as given by Suta Goswami at the end of the 7th chapter of the 2nd canto. The short commentary, one paragraph. In the jargon of the impersonalists adopted from the Upanishads, okay, the terminology comes from the Upanishads, but then the impersonalists use these terms in their own way. In their jargon, You know what a jargon is? Everybody know what a jargon is? Anybody not know what a jargon is? Yeah, that means a particular community has its own sublanguage, you know, words that it uses only they understand. Especially a specialized language. Doctors have theirs, lawyers have theirs, and ISKCON has its. Okay. Brahman, okay, in the jargon of the impersonalists adopted from the Upanishads, Brahman shares the same designation, Atma, with the personal form of Paramatma. Okay, Brahman is called Atma in the Upanishads. Paramatma is called Atma also, and Jivatma is also. And there isn't really much distinction made in the Upanishads, mostly. Continuing, the sense in which Brahman is considered the supreme soul, however, is different from how the Paramatma is so considered. This is interesting. Brahman is called supreme soul, but it doesn't mean the same thing as calling Paramatma supreme soul. What is that? The impersonalist view does not recognize the reality of the supreme's energies, and so does not involve properly understanding of of the importance of his varied relationships with his energies. When you're talking about Brahman, when you're thinking in terms of Brahman, you're not thinking about the relationships of the Lord with his energies. Rather, depersonalized Brahman is supposed to be the only real entity, with all dualities, spiritual and material, coming into being only by the inexplicable power of illusion. That's according to the Mayavadis. Perhaps the evolution of empiric existence from Brahman is by subdivision or reflection, or else it is only hallucination. But in any case, there is supposed to be only one real soul, and all else is in the ultimate issue unreal. Thus, the impersonalists judge the Supreme Lord to also be unreal, as the greatest illusion. And so the personalists label these antagonists Mayavadis, because they say that Krishna's Maya also. So this is the difference. When you call the Brahman supreme soul, if you're a real hardcore impersonalist, what you mean by it is it's the only real thing and everything else is illusion. When the Paramatmavadis, say the yogis or the devotees, talk about Paramatma as supreme soul, what they mean is that he has his energies, and those energies are real, and he has personal relationships with his energies. Those are two very different concepts, even though they're both called supreme soul. Okay? That's enough for now. We'll stop here. Okay? Idea, term, supreme soul, but it's understood one way by the Mayavadis, another way by those who understand Paramatma. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavat Sandarbha Ki Jai.